Welcome to the Polygamer Podcast, where gaming is for everyone. Join us as we expand the boundaries of the gaming community.
Tonight I have the good fortune of speaking with my friend Francesca Carletto Leon. Hello there.
Hi Ken, how are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well.
Excellent. So Francesca, you are a senior at Worcester Polytechnic Institute, my own alma mater in Worcester, Massachusetts, where you are majoring in interactive media game design and are also the co-founder of the Diversity in Gaming Club. Did I get all that right?
Yep, that's right. And I'm actually also double majoring in professional writing.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, I have a strong interest in writing as well.
That's right. I did notice that on your LinkedIn profile, because not only are you at my alma mater, but that was my major as well.
Yeah. We have a lot in common.
Back when I was a student, we called it technical, scientific, and professional writing. And then they decided that was too verbose, so they changed it to professional writing.
Yeah, interactive media and game development is already a mouthful. So if I had two majors that were just like very verbose, that would be terrible.
They might have to give you like an extra long form diploma just to fit it all.
Exactly. And then my name is also super long. It would just be a disaster.
Oh my gosh, the hyphens, I know.
I know, right?
Honestly. So what prompted you to go to WPI and major in IMGD? What was your goal in doing so?
I mean, as a kid, I was always very into video games, but more as a hobby. Actually, my junior year of high school, when I started looking at different colleges I wanted to apply to, I actually had a friend who was a year older than me who ended up going to Columbia College in Chicago specifically for their game development program. So that's kind of what got me thinking about it and kind of opened my horizons to being like, wow, that's an actual thing that I could study and that's a possibility for me. So I ended up picking WPI after looking at a number of different schools because WPI was the only school that offered kind of like a hybrid between tech focus in game development and artistic focus. Though our major is divided into art track and tech track, you're required to take classes from both. So even though I'm art track with a focus in like writing and 3D art, I've also taken a number of programming classes, enough so that I can, you know, code my own small games and such. So that was my primary reasoning for picking this school over others.
It's a very interdisciplinary major then.
Yeah.
I love that, because when I was there, I was majoring in computer science, mm-hmm. and we were focusing on operating systems and networking and all this stuff that didn't seem directly applicable to creating the next Final Fantasy or Super Mario Bros.
Yeah. So a lot of programs that I looked at, like some of the UC schools, they had programs that were like focusing on game development, but it would be like only computer science, so only the technical aspect. Or I looked at art schools that would be only the art aspect, and I would have no sort of formal training in like integrating the two together, which I feel is a very valuable skill.
So why major in professional writing? Because that is not fiction writing, which might be applicable mm-hmm. to creating video games. It's more akin to tech writing. How do you see that integrating with what you're doing?
To be honest, my school, or WPI, doesn't offer any sort of like creative writing or any sort of majors like that. Professional writing, I think, is the only dedicated writing major that you can pick. So that was my initial like, hey, I like writing and they have a writing major, I'll just do that. And it was very different from what I expected coming from my high school past of like fantasy and like fan fiction writing, delving into this world of professional writing. Was very new and strange to me. I think it's also strengthened me as a person, just being able to express myself a lot better in professional settings. I also have a really great interest in like QA testing and play testing for like a heightened user experience. And those are all things that really value written skills, I feel. So I feel like it does relate, maybe not directly, but I feel it will help me in the long run.
How do you see yourself applying all these skills once you graduate? Like, what sort of work do you want to be doing?
Oh, this is a question I'm getting asked a lot now.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to put you on the spot.
Yeah, no. It's fine. No, because I'm about halfway through almost halfway through my senior year. So like my parents are asking me this. I had my academic advisor ask me this the other day.
Well, to be clear, I'm not as interested in how you're going to be paying your bills, but more philosophically, mm-hmm. like, do you want to be creating like fun games or indie games? Do you want to be working in Silicon Valley? Do you want to be challenging mm-hmm. the status quo and representing marginalized voices? Do you want to be a developer, a designer, a QA person? I'm interested in everything. Regardless of whether or not it's financially viable.
Yeah, no, I'm also thinking along those lines. I'm definitely keeping options open that are more financially viable and would be able to support me a little bit better. But honestly, my deep love is of indie games, and I think will always will be. So I think my ideal place after I graduate would be on a small team, maybe like 10 people or so. Just like a tight-knit group making something that they really, really care about, as opposed to going to a AAA where I would have the financial stability and I would be able to work with, you know, industry veterans who can teach me incredible amounts. But I do feel it's much less personal, which is something that I highly value as far as my own game development and design goes. Did that answer the question? What else? You said everything.
Well, you certainly would be in good company if you pursued the indie path, because previously on my other podcast, IndieCider, I interviewed Chris Chung. Are you familiar with him?
Yes.
Yeah.
So he also graduated from WPI.
Right, right. He went to WPI. He went on to create Cat Lateral Damage.
Yeah, which is a phenomenal game. It's so much fun.
And literally across the street from WPI is Becker College, and I interviewed Sarah Como.
Yeah, she's also like so incredible.
I'm sure she would say the same about you.
Yeah, these are all people that I look up to so much.
They're not that much farther down the path from you.
Oh, I guess so. I feel like I still have a long way to go. So I definitely look up to these people who've come before me. But yeah, that's awesome.
Wonderful. So let's talk about your Diversity in Gaming Club, because I went to WPI. There was a very active gaming scene there, not only video games. This was in the era of the Nintendo 64, as far as mm-hmm. I know, the first console to have four controller ports, but also Dungeons and Dragons. A lot of people playing mm-hmm. all kinds of games at WPI. So you didn't need to create that community from the ground up, but when you came to WPI, you decided to focus on a very specific niche and start a new club. Tell us about mm-hmm. that.
Yeah, I think when I first came to WPI, coming out of a high school where, you know, I went to a very big high school where everyone was like, you know, trying to be cool, whatever, and like nerdy things, of course, were frowned upon. So coming to WPI where everyone loves video games. Almost everyone loves video games. Everyone loves nerdy things. When I came to WPI, that was the first time I LARPed, actually. I was invited to LARP, and I had, like, the time of my life. It was awesome. But, like, that was something I'd never experienced before, like, this sense of community and, like, other people who liked the same things as me, as much as I did. When I first got here, I joined the Game Development Club. I joined like the Science Fiction Society, the Japanese Culture Club. Like, there's so many amazing already established clubs on campus. Though what spurred me to start the Diversity in Games Club wasn't sort of a lack of games or entertainment focused clubs, but rather sort of out of a criticism for how the major itself was organized. So I don't know if you know this, but IMGD majors are only required to take one sort of social issues or philosophy and ethics class. And after taking that course, I felt that it just wasn't enough, especially for the demographic that I feel WPI most attracts, which is white men. So I feel that advocating for diversity, not only within my program, but in how people interact with and look at games and design them was something that was really important to me, and I kind of saw lacking on my campus, sort of an awareness for that.
And why was this important to you? Because I, as one of those white men who went to WPI, wasn't thinking about diversity up until probably the last 5 years or so, and I'm mm-hmm. about 15 years older than you, but so this was on your radar much sooner than it was on mine. Why was that? Mm-hmm.
Well, I think another thing is that I came from a very diverse high school. I went to a Washington, D.C. public school where the white students were actually not the majority. So I was always used to being surrounded by lots of diversity, lots of different cultures. And then coming to WPI, just even looking around the general student population, you don't get that as much, which I think because it is a tech school and its location and certain other reasons. But I think coming into a space where when I entered WPI, I think it was still about 75-80% male. And then also going into my major, which I would probably estimate is like a 90% or above like percentage male. That was the first time that I actually started identifying as a feminist, just because in high school and previously I'd never seen sort of a need for that. But coming into a space that I've never felt actively threatened, but certain things where I would feel forgotten by professors, by their phrasing or some sort of thing they would say. So that was the first time where I really felt that advocating for just sort of recognition that, like, hey, women are here, we play games, we do this sort of thing. So becoming a feminist very much related to my interest in games and game development. That was kind of a very rambling answer.
It was a wonderful answer, and it's very okay. Interesting to hear that you came to WPI from just the opposite direction of me, because
yeah.
I went to a private high school in Massachusetts where out of 117 students, 114 of them were white. And so there was almost no diversity. And it wasn't until I got to WPI that I realized, oh, there are other kinds of people in the world.
Oh, so yeah, complete opposite experience.
Right. So WPI was dramatically more diverse for me, whereas for you, it was less diverse and you felt the need to correct that.
Mm-hmm.
And also WPI was an all-men's college up until 1968.
Yeah.
Which really wasn't all that long ago. And, I mean, especially in academia, there are probably still some professors who were there who remember those days.
Yeah. I was actually mentioning this to some of my friends recently. We were talking about how WPI used to be like an all-men's school. And actually, even in the building that I'm in right now, Salisbury Estates, you can kind of see this actually reflected in where the bathrooms are for men and women. So there are less bathrooms for women in this building, and one of them is like basically a closet on the first floor, which I thought was interesting. Something that I noticed.
I think you mean Salisbury Labs?
Salisbury Labs. Did I say Salisbury States?
Right, because that's where I live senior year, Salisbury
yeah,
States.
Yeah, sorry, Salisbury Labs.
No worries.
You're right. I've been working too much Snap.
Well, one thing I'm curious about is Brianna Wu is advocating for a world where there are more female game designers and game developers.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have her exact statistics in front of me right now, but I think she says like right now it's only like 3-4%. There's a greater parity in design and art, but not so much in development.
Yeah, so like technical positions.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah.
Do you feel that colleges, either WPI specifically or just in general, I mean, you said that your major is still predominantly men. Is that
yes.
because there isn't enough effort being made to attract women? I mean, I know it's not true, the old trope that, oh, if women were interested in it, they would major in it.
Yeah.
I know that's not true. But what do you think is the reason that your major is so male-dominated? That's kind of a big question, but...
Yeah, that is a big question. Well, I'll start off by saying that WPI does have a number of really, really great programs trying to encourage more diversity in the student body. When I was applying and after I was accepted, I actually received a postcard from a female student who went here, and she graduated, I think, 2 years ago. But they actually have a program where female students can volunteer to come in and write postcards to accepted women and just let them know, like, how the school is or anything, you know, you want to tell them. So I got this postcard just saying, like, hi, like, I hope you like WPI, whatever, some other stuff, information about herself. And then she gave me her email. So we actually started emailing back and forth. And she was also a game development major at the time. So I asked a little bit about that. So that was also something that made me feel very welcome, and just kind of just the fact that WPI was even making the effort to kind of do that and reach out to me and encourage friendships between female students, and kind of like myself and this other student kind of fostered a sort of mentorship when I was like selecting schools, and she sort of helped me out and everything. And we actually became very good friends when I started attending school here. So WPI does have a number of things they do every single year to try to get women specifically, but also just advocating for diversity in the student body, which I think is awesome, honestly. What was the second half of the question? I'm sorry.
No, I mean, I think that's most of it is WPI may be doing their best to address those issues. Mm-hmm. And I know that, I don't know if this program is still there, but when I was there, they had a program called GEMS, Girls in Engineering, Math, and Science.
Mm.
It was a summer program for younger pre-college students. So I'm aware of some of those programs.
Yeah.
It's great that WPI is doing that. And yet, computer science and IMGD still remain fairly male-dominated.
Mm-hmm. I think that, unfortunately, is a problem that kind of originates outside of the school and what the school can control. And I think that goes back to, you know, gender norms, like even like children as young as elementary school being told like what sort of things they should like and stuff. So I don't know. I always struggled with math. As even in elementary school, I think I always struggled with math. I was actually told quite a few times by like male peers, like other kids in my class, that just like girls aren't good at math, so it's okay. Like trying to make me feel better, not in a like demeaning way, but just like sort of that was just like, oh, okay, like that's just how it is or something like that. So I think unfortunately that's a problem that originates way before WPI can even like reach out to potential students. And I think particularly for game programs, that also reflects on the industry and who the industry is marketing as, you know, gamers. And then after you have this definition that like, oh, like a gamer is a boy. And then the boy grows up and he goes to college and he already has this deep, profound interest and knowledge of games. So they're going to go study games and then go into the industry and make games that are targeted for boys. And then the cycle continues and continues. So I think, yeah, no, I really admire Brianna Wu's work and just like trying to break this never ending cycle and trying to get more women to just be interested in this as a field and as a potential career path. But that's difficult, especially right now, I feel. So.
Yes, it's certainly not been made easier in the past year or so.
Yes.
but you're certainly doing your own part to address those issues at the collegiate level with your Diversity in Games Club. So tell me about the club. What does it do?
So I actually just got out of our first meeting of the term. Generally our big goal is just to provide a space where people can come together and talk about issues in the gaming community or talk about marginalized demographics in the gaming communities. And that's sort of our big goal, is just to provide a space where that is like deemed acceptable and encouraged, because sometimes it's harder to criticize or speak out about these issues, especially ones that are related to women in the industry, when you're like the only woman in a classroom of all male peers taught by like a male professor. So just providing a space where people can come together and talk about these issues. So today, for example, we had our starting meeting where we kind of like brainstormed topics for the rest of the term, topics that we want to discuss together and explore. And then we did a short little meeting talking about video game marketing. So specifically talking about like, I think we talked a lot about Fallout 4, just because that's the big thing that everyone's talking about right now. But yeah, just talking about, marketing techniques, box art, visuals that are associated with like video game marketing and like who they target, what they're saying, So like one specific thing we looked at was like the Kirby box art. Which I don't know if you know this, but in if you look at the comparisons of Japanese box art for Kirby versus the American box art for Kirby, all of the Kirbys on the American box art have really angry eyes, and Kirby's like, he's mad. He's just really mad about something. And in a lot of them, he's also holding a weapon, which you almost never see in Japanese box art for Kirby. So just looking at things like that and kind of discussing, like, what does this mean about the target demographic? What are the stereotypes that the marketing teams even have about what it means to be a gamer or who's a gamer, and how that eventually affects the community? Yeah, so that's what we did today.
That's really interesting, because on the surface, I wouldn't think of the box art and marketing of games as being an issue for a diversity club, but you really tied it in really elegantly.
Yeah, I think one thing, when I first was pitching this club to the club advisor, I originally wanted it to be like a women in gaming club, because We on campus, we also have like women in computer science. We have women in electrical and computer engineering. We have a lot of women's groups and sort of like support groups, but also like places to foster friendships, help each other out in classes, which I think is great. But again, like looking at how small the IMGD major still is and how many women are actually in this program, I thought it might actually be impossible to create a women in games group right now as the program stands.
Did you experience any resistance or challenges in finding the group?
Yes. I would just say the biggest issue is just fostering or like encouraging interest. Because a lot of the people that we're trying to get to come to these meetings, again, like, the majority of the students at my school are white men who a lot of them don't see a need for advocating for diversity or awareness for it. So then also, like, when I was pitching this original club idea as like women in games, I thought about, you know, it's also important for men to talk about these issues, but how many of my male peers would actually willingly attend a club meeting like that? So we ended up kind of broadening what the club discusses. So not only issues surrounding gender, but also surrounding sexuality, race, all sorts of things. And then we also talk a lot about just diversity and even like game mechanics and how we can create diverse games that are new and different and exciting, which is something that I think at least my male peers can feel they can contribute to a lot more, which in turn gets us more interest for the club, which is good, because then we can talk about other things that are more challenging topics, but we've kind of already created a sense of community where we can discuss those things. Yeah.
I imagine it can be difficult to brainstorm topics because gaming is fun and diversity in gaming is important, but diversity in gaming isn't always fun.
No.
So what are some other topics you've brought up, or you've brought some guest speakers in, right?
Yeah, so this past term, actually, while I was away, away doing my project abroad, we actually had Amanda Warner of Giant Space Cat, who works with Brianna Wu, come in and give a talk about freelancing and getting into the games industry, which is not something that's particularly, you know, diversity related, but we also feel that just encouraging, you know, female speakers to come in and give these talks that are not only open to club members, but to the entire WPI community, just promoting like female video development work is also something that's incredibly important to the club.
And you also recently held a diversity arcade?
Yeah.
What was that?
Yeah, so again, unfortunately, I wasn't there for it, but Benny Peek, who took over for me as president while I was away, so he was acting as interim president. They organized this diversity arcade, which was just this enormous 12-hour straight like video game room where they set up, I think, like 16 or more screens with just games on them running for the whole 12 hours. And the WPI community, the student body, was just encouraged to, like, come in and hang out and talk about the games you're playing. And I believe they purposefully set up, games that were not, ultra violent or, so there wasn't like Halo multiplayer there, but instead we presented like Nidhogg, which is, still like it's like a fencing game. So it's still partially violent, like one-on-one sort of swordplay game. But it's something that is, indie developed, which we want to support. Yeah. So the Diversity Arcade ran 12 straight hours. We also had a fundraising goal of just $100 because, poor college students don't have much to spare. But we actually surpassed the fundraising goal. I think we raised about $150, which we then donated to Able Gamers.
Oh, excellent. I thought you were going to say that this was for the club's operating expenses, but it was for a third party.
Oh, no. Yeah, so we actually decided we were going to fundraise as much as we could for Able Gamers.
Why that charity?
We were looking at charities that were specifically game-related and related to the goals of the club. Able Gamers is a wonderful charity that advocates, I think their motto is, like, so everyone can game. So it's a lot of awareness about gamers with disabilities, such as, like, color blindness is a really big one. So even just educating developers and educating developers about these certain disabilities and how they can rework or design their games in a more friendly way so that it's more accessible, which is something that is wonderful. And they're also just a bunch of really, really nice people. If you like, check out any of their events or their Twitter pages. So,
was it at their panel that you and I were sitting together at PAX East this year?
I don't remember.
The whole weekend is sort of a blur, right?
I know, right? I don't remember. Did they do a panel?
Yes, they did.
Okay. I'm not sure I actually attended their panel if they had one. I think the one... Oh, God, where were we at?
Was it the one about gender representation?
Yeah, that was it.
I thought so. And I think Burger Becky was there. It was one of the trans panels.
Yes. Yeah.
Yep.
That was a phenomenal panel.
Yeah. What's the name of that group? Press XY?
I can't remember. PAX East feels so long ago.
Yeah, it was Press XY. We had I think Charles Battersby was on that panel. And Charles was on a previous episode of Polygamer talking about not that topic, but I would certainly love to revisit that issue.
Yeah.
And PAX East 2016 tickets should be on sale sometime in the next month.
Oh, gosh. Okay. Time to get stressed out.
Because you're not already being in your senior year of college.
Yeah. It's just, God, the tickets went so fast last year. And I remember, I was sitting in a club meeting for the recently established Gender Equality Club on campus. We were, in the middle of a meeting and everyone was like, pause the meeting. PAX tickets just went on sale. everybody has to run to a computer. We will all be right back. And that's again, sense of community at WPI where everyone's very interested in a lot of the same things. And you see, it's surprising to me that Gender Equality Club, most of the people in there were all buying tickets for PAX East.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was great. So a great overlap of my interests. And there's so many people on this campus who are doing a lot of really, really great work in terms of advocating for diversity on campus. So.
Now, PAX East is, of course, held in Boston, which is about an hour from you. Worcester is in central Massachusetts. It's the second biggest city in New England. And despite having to go to school during the day and being an hour away, you and your club often make field trips to the Women in Games group.
Yeah. So we try to attend those every single month. We missed you at this past one.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I just started a new day job and I'm still acclimating to the commute and the life. I didn't want to try to tack something else onto it.
Yeah, no, I feel that.
But group meets every Monday night?
Yeah, we actually we realized there was this overlap where Women in Games meets the first Monday of every month. And we always do carpools for that. So we just kind of worked it into our schedule so that our meetings would actually overlap with theirs. So one of our meetings every month is just a carpool to Women in Games.
That must make for a very long night.
Yeah, well, no, we actually schedule like our Diversity in Games Club meetings start at 7, and the WIG meetings also start at 7, so it replaces our usual meeting.
Right, but there's an hour of commuting on either end.
Oh, well, yes.
And not every college student has cars. It's great that you're carpooling.
Yeah, so we're really trying to encourage students to also reach out to the nearby Boston community and just like meet people, say hi, you know, promote yourself, promote your work, which is something that is really important also for the major, in terms of like employment, rates and such.
Yeah, I would say one of the most valuable things you can do at college, whether it's undergraduate or graduate, is network.
Networking.
Yep, and getting off campus, especially to events like WIG, is great because there are so many people in the same industry who are struggling with the same issues that groups like the Diversity in Gaming group are.
Yeah.
And there are so many people who are looking for allies and advocates and new talent.
Exactly. So that's another thing we're really trying to promote. And then like the hour honestly to and from Boston flies by. On the way there, we're just chatting about classes and whatever, and then, you know, usually the Women in Games, whatever the lecture is that month, is like super engaging, and then we leave and we want to talk about it, and we just talk about it the whole hour back to Worcester, kind of giving our own ideas and developing our opinions about it more. So
now, this is something that you and I have talked a little bit about, but I want to revisit it, which is one of the people that you networked with at WIG about a year ago was me. You and I met at WIG. And you've talked about bringing guest speakers into your Diversity in Gaming group, and you talked about bringing me in. And the question I had for you was...
Come talk to us.
I would love to. It's just a matter of scheduling. Mm. But a conversation that you and I have already had, which was not on the record, now I want to do it for the podcast just briefly, is how can a Diversity in Gaming club justify bringing in a straight white cisgendered male? I mean, isn't that sort of the opposite of what a Diversity in Gaming group should be listening to?
Okay, I'm trying to remember what I said when we had this conversation previously.
Oh, I'm sure it was brilliant.
Okay. I'm sure it was. I just can't remember right now.
Well, you don't even have to remember. I mean, assuming you still want me to be a guest speaker, why would you do that?
So I think, again, looking at who our club members are and who we're trying to get to attend the club and talk about these issues, it's mostly white men. And a lot of the times when we talk about issues like feminism, feminism often, or advocating for feminism, often fails when it's women trying to talk to men about feminism, because men, you know, will feel attacked or judged or like they're doing something wrong, they're being accused of something. So the solution often for this is for men who identify as feminist or, you know, have feminist sort of ideals, talk to other men, which is perceived as much less threatening, a much more comfortable environment where they can be open about their feelings and, you know, talking about stuff like that. So, one thing that I said we really struggle with is just, maintaining, interest and, bringing in new members from this community, which is mostly, white men at WPI. So I feel that when engaging in these difficult conversations where we are talking about a lot of the time that the issue with the industry, it all stems from it being very male dominated, not diverse, whatever. And then these white male students who are seeking to pursue this career path into this industry, feel like they're being judged or told they shouldn't be doing that because they're reinforcing this, even though that's not their intention at all. So I believe when I was talking with you about it and you asked me that question, it's so much easier to discuss these things, you know, I think sometimes between men, just touching on these difficult topics. I think that's what I said.
Oh, that sounds about right, because the inequality of the genders is a man-made problem.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
I mean that literally. It's a problem for the people in power to fix because they're the ones who create it. Women didn't come along and say, hey, we want to be unequal.
Yeah. Right.
But at the same time, I'm reminded of this ACLU video that was just created this past month, featuring Saturday Night Live actress and comedian Sasheer Zamata. Have you seen this?
No, I haven't.
It shows a black woman and a white man walking down the street talking about the inequality of the genders and races.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point, the guy stops and says, I consider myself a feminist. And as soon as he says that, the mayor of the city shows up, hands him the key to the city. The press show up. They're taking photos. They're getting his autograph. And the woman says, I'm a feminist too. And nobody pays any attention to her.
Yeah.
So I understand that men might be more likely to listen to men, but at the same time, it's a fine line to make sure that the men aren't being applauded for doing really just the bare minimum.
Yeah, no, you're definitely right. It is a very fine line.
but I do
feel that it is easier and more well received often. And and the club, we are focusing on bringing in like women to talk about feminism. But then again, like a lot of people, or a lot of male students might see that as being like accusatory or kind of like women ganging up on them is something that I've heard. Or just like they don't feel welcome or safe in that conversation space. I think another example I told you is that back when I was doing development meetings for the Game Development Club, we held a meeting where we wanted to discuss harassment in online games and how we deal with it and how we, you know, react to it, whatever, and various coping mechanisms and things like this. And I asked a lot of my female peers to come and be kind of on this board of just like answering questions because I thought it was really important that the men in the club be able to kind of like ask us questions because, you know, women are one of the prime targets of online harassment in like mostly like competitive gaming, but gaming in general. I think the one man I had asked to be on this panel wasn't able to make it that day. So it turned into a panel of women of varying ethnicities and races talking about their experiences of being harassed by gamer men to a room that was just made up of gamer men. So it ended up being this sort of I don't know. It felt like a showdown, honestly. And I didn't like how it felt at all. Cause it felt very like us versus you guys. And I think the men felt very uncomfortable and that was entirely my mistake in setting that up.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, I understand your intentions were good, and you certainly didn't plan for it to go that way.
It was a learning experience. Yeah. So that kind of is what changed my opinion. Instead of being like, oh, let's take all of the women developers and make them come talk to all these male students and like set them straight. It's like diversity. Just let's get a diverse group of people to come and talk to them and about a variety of different things. And we'll see how it's perceived. And yeah, so that was why I approached you to come and be a speaker.
We've been talking a lot about gender. And as you mentioned, there is a gender equality group on campus,
yep.
But your group is not diversity in game gender. It's diversity in games, period. So what other aspects of diversity do you address in your group?
Let me see if I can think of an example. We do talk about sexuality a lot. We talk about race. Like earlier today, we were looking at box art. We were talking about I'm blanking now. I should just pull up the PowerPoint that we had. But we were just talking about, oh God, what is that? It's the box art where there's the guy in the suit, and there's sort of an indigenous looking man holding a grenade in front of him who's kneeling.
I don't know that example. Far Cry?
It is. It's Far Cry. Yeah, it's Far Cry 3, I think. Yeah, we were looking at box art for that and just talking about how, even though it might have been unintentional, you know, images speak a certain way and have a certain, meaning associated with them, right? Did you pull it up?
I just pulled it up. I'm looking at, it's Far Cry 4, and that's awful.
Far Cry 4. Yeah, so it was that one, and then when they released the limited edition
they fixed it.
Yeah, they got rid of it, and it's just the guy sitting on this statue, the white guy sitting on the statue.
You know, when you see this, you have to wonder, what were they thinking?
Like, yeah, see, the thing is that that was the criticism that they got. But I've been told by peers that this game was kind of intended as kind of making fun of the state of first-person shooters and how they are hyper-violent and most of the time racist and stuff like that. But the thing is, like, the standalone image of the cover art doesn't explain that or give any sort of indication of that. So that was something that we discussed today. So topics like that.
Yeah, I'm reading this article on VG247.com. There'll be a link in the show notes, which apparently clarifies that the person sitting on the throne is not, in fact, white, and that there are a minority of white characters in the game, and none of them are the villains.
Hmm. But then again, looking at this box art and this sort of like standalone image, most people did not perceive it that way.
Right, because there's all this context that you need to go online and research.
Exactly.
And nobody's going to do that. I think this is an argument in favor of having more diversity in the workplace, because maybe if this had crossed the desk of somebody who might represent a marginalized group, they would have said, hey, all you white guys, maybe you need to stop and think about this.
Yeah, so...
But when you have this echo chamber with everybody representing just this monoculture, then you don't get that diversity or plurality of perspective.
Yep.
Ridiculous.
Yeah.
So speaking of different cultures, you just got back from Japan.
Yeah, I did a couple weeks ago now. Yeah.
So WPI has these major projects that every student has to complete in order to graduate. One is called the Interactive Qualifying Project, or IQP, and the other is the Major Qualifying Project, or MQP. The MQP is in your major. The IQP is interdisciplinary. They are sometimes referred to as the junior thesis and the senior thesis. Mm-hmm. And WPI sends a lot of students abroad to do one or both of these projects. Were you doing one of yours in Japan?
Yes. So I was working on my major qualifying project, or my senior project, in Japan.
And as a double major, do you have to do two MQPs?
Oh my gosh. Ken, let me tell you, I have actually, my entire day today was spent struggling with just that topic. So yes, you do have to do two MQPs if you're a double major. But WPI now has a system in place, which I think was implemented in the past maybe 5 years or so, where you can do a combined larger project for like the equivalent of one extra class worth of credits, and it qualifies for a double major, which is great.
And were you arguing in favor of you having done that in Japan?
There was just a mix-up with credits and being told I wouldn't be able to do a double major MQP in Japan, but then being able to, but not having an advisor and sort of retroactively trying to change my credits. I think the registrar hates me now. I gave them so much trouble trying to sort this out. I had a bit of a scare earlier today where I was realizing I might not be able to graduate with my second major finished. But that's now sorted out. So thank you, WPI Registrar. Ooh,
what a relief.
I know. It was a very stressful day.
So what was your MQP in Japan?
So for the Japan MQP, we're hosted at a university and we're given like a computer and some desk space. And basically for IMGD majors, your MQP or your senior project is just your big polished portfolio piece that you're going to be showing to everyone as you look for jobs after graduation. So it was basically just make a cool game.
And why is that something you needed to go to Japan to do?
WPI, the reason they have all of these global sort of like host centers, I think also relates back to the topic of diversity, where a lot of the students do come from like Massachusetts area, haven't maybe traveled as much or experienced other cultures. So I think a large part of why they encourage students to go away is not only so that you can focus on your project and just your project for a term while not worrying about other the rest of your course load or other classes, but you're also experiencing a whole new world while you're there, and you're experiencing a different place, a different work environment, which I think makes you, you know, a better candidate for potential careers in the future. Just being able to adapt to lots of different work environments and being able to self-manage your time and your team, which was something that was very difficult for me, but we pulled through.
So you had a team that you were working on?
Yes. So we were a team of 4 students.
And what did you all culminate in releasing a game?
Yes.
And what, tell us about the game.
Okay. Let me try to give you guys a cool sounding pitch. So the game that we decided to create is a game called Chinmoku, which means silence in Japanese. And it's a puzzle game, with horror and mystery elements. That's actually also an educational game teaching Japanese language skills. So we focus specifically on hiragana, which is one of the Japanese writing systems, and teaching users how to write each character, how each character is read, and such. So that was the project that we developed.
And is there somewhere that we can find this online or learn more about it?
Ooh, it's not up yet. but we're actually working on releasing a demo build that we can, you know, just release to everyone and get some feedback on the game. We're also planning to take it to a number of Boston local events, such as, I know Women in Games is having another demo night coming up, so we're going to be bringing our game to that. And actually within Worcester, there's now the Woo Game Pile, which is another indie developer meetup, and they're also going to be having a demo night, so we'll be showing it there and kind of getting some feedback. I would say the biggest downside to going away for a game development senior project is that you're only given one term to work on this project, and at WPI, the term system is the year is divided into quarters, and each quarter is 7 weeks, so that's a term. We went to Japan a little bit early. We had some time in the summer, so it was about a 3-month project where we were just developing this game full-time, all the time. I think we're all kind of sick of it at this point. Proud, but sick of it.
And was this a project that you devised from the ground up? This was your idea?
Yes.
That's awesome, because when I did my IQP in Melbourne, Australia, they basically gave us a list of projects to choose from.
Oh, yeah.
Not my favorite approach.
Yeah, I would say that some project centers do that. The other computer science-focused project center is actually over in Silicon Valley, and you go work at companies, and you're assigned a task that you work on while you're there. So developing software for the company that they're going to use, by their company, by people. So in that case, the projects are predetermined. But for game development, the only requirement was that it fill our requirement of MQP standards and regulations, and that our advisor approved it. Our team came up with a number of pitches, and we just kind of pitched them to our advisor and developed them a little bit more, and finally settled on this educational game, which we felt was the only idea that we had that really took advantage of us actually being at the project center in Japan. So while we were learning the language ourselves, and we kind of observed how we interacted with the language and how we were able to memorize and learn the best, and kind of putting that into an educational game, kind of using ourselves as guinea pigs.
I think that's fantastic, because not only are you more invested in a project when you conceive of it in the first place, but also just being able to come up with and pitch an idea is a very important process, especially in the games industry.
Yeah. Yeah, I would definitely agree.
Yeah, I mean, granted, depending on where you are in the hierarchy, there will be game studios that have a list of games that they want to work on. You help choose which one. But I think what really jazzes people up to be working in the game industry is the idea that they could someday work on their own game.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
The fact that you've already done that without even having finished college yet is fantastic.
Yeah, I'm pretty proud of what we ended up creating in such a short amount of time.
Now, you said one of the benefits of working overseas is just being in a different work environment. So what was it like to work in Japan? How was that different from working on that same game, say, in Boston?
I would say just because we did decide to make like an education language game, as I said, we drew a lot of the design off of our own experience and how we were learning at the time. So that's something that if we had created this project, say, anywhere in the U.S., really, we would have lacked that sort of immersion and experience that we felt really guided the gameplay, the pacing of how we like introduce the language to people. So that would just be a lot more difficult to kind of fine tune if we weren't in sort of like very invested in that setting. Going outside of just talking about the project, like just the people there were amazing. They were so friendly and so nice, and just being able to experience like an entirely different culture while also working on this project was really great.
I've never been to Japan. In fact, probably my most familiarity with it from an American perspective, as opposed to the art and culture that's come out of Japan, is the Bill Murray movie, Lost in Translation.
Mm.
I assume you've seen it?
Yeah, that's a wonderful film.
I'm glad you think so. It seems to be a love it or hate it film. There's very few people who stand in the middle ground, and I'm definitely in the love it camp. But it suggests to me that someone who is not immersed in Japanese culture or language can go to Japan and be absolutely alone in a very crowded community. They can just be completely isolated. Was that your experience?
I would say I've actually been to Japan before. I did a like a high school sort of like a broad program over the summer where I went and took language courses and such. So I had been to Japan before and knew a little bit of the language. But it is just like being in a culture, especially one where you can't speak the language, and in the case of Japan, where you can't read most things, even just in public, every day is just a little more taxing, because everything you do, you have to think about, and it's just a little bit more effort to succeed, even just like going to the supermarket and like buying something, because you can't read anything. Or you have to look it up if you want to read it. So just every little thing takes a little bit more effort, and it's a little more exhausting. But I would also argue that it's a little more rewarding, even just taking the right bus home, because you asked and were understood and were given directions that you understood. It's difficult and it's scary, but it's so rewarding, and you feel so competent and even like independent when you're able to achieve that.
What was the most surprising about Japan?
Let's see. I don't know. Most surprising.
Like something you didn't expect to be challenging, or something that you thought would be challenging but was actually very easy?
That's a very difficult question. I would say even just like interacting with students my age in the laboratory that was hosting us, that gave us desk space and machines. Even just communicating with them, you know, it's a little more difficult because they speak a little English, I speak a little Japanese, but also overcoming sort of like these very minuscule cultural differences. Like, like even the way that you beckon for someone to like come towards you, usually in American culture, we'll face our palms upward and kind of beckon that way, kind of swiping upward. Like in Japan, that's considered very rude, and you actually face your palm down and do kind of like a doggy paddle kind of motion. So it's even just things like that, even just like gestures that would be completely misunderstood, which I wasn't expecting to be something that would be so difficult. But there's a lot of things that I think we assume to be globally understood or globally accepted, such as using gestures as an example, like hand gestures, but then are completely like mistaken or considered rude or mean something completely different. So I'd say that was something that I was assuming was going to be very easy, like talking to people my age, whatever. We all like the same things. We're all into like tech stuff and computer science. But communicating with them was also, I felt I always needed to be very careful and aware and observing and copying, like a little kid kind of when you're learning a language.
I'm sure they appreciated that you were putting so much thought and effort into this.
I hope so.
I'm sure it went noticed. Did you get much opportunity to check out the gaming scene out there? Because, of course, they have access to so many games we don't, and the arcades, yeah, as far as I can tell from the documentary 100 Yen, are still quite lively.
Yeah, I got to play Pokemon Tekken, which I think isn't out in the U.S. yet, right?
I don't think I've ever even heard of it.
Yeah, so it's just Tekken. It's a fighting game, but it's Pokemon.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I thought you meant like it was a mashup of Pokemon and Tekken.
No. Well, it's like a Tekken-style game, but you're playing Pokemon.
Yes, I have heard of
it. Awesome.
That.
It's so good.
Gotcha. Oh, that's right. Oh, I see now. It was developed by Namco.
Yeah.
I get it. Okay.
Yeah. So I got to play that in one of the arcades. It's also very interesting. I actually came across one arcade that had Left 4 Dead arcade machines, which is like a PC, like Steam game released by Valve. Which was just like very, very strange that was something that they felt, I guess, like adaptable to an arcade setting. So they just kind of threw it in there. And actually an interesting thing to note is that all of the campaigns and gameplay are pretty much the same as the English PC release, but the characters are actually entirely different. So they have one who's like a businesswoman, and they have one that's like a schoolgirl in her uniform, which I thought was interesting.
That is interesting. Just these small changes they felt it necessary to make.
Yeah, like specifically like characters and character representation was very interesting, but nothing else really changed.
So you spent quite a bit of time there, and then you did some traveling afterward, and now you're home. Have you gotten over your jet lag? Have you gotten your land legs back?
Yeah. Unfortunately, I'm very much readjusted to my hectic college life.
Unfortunately, you say?
Yeah, it's been a little crazy. After we got back, so actually earlier today, we actually submitted our final MQP project. So it's done.
Yay!
Yeah, I know this weight has been lifted off my shoulders. But yeah, so up until now, we've been like working on the paper frantically, which we have to submit to the WPI library, and polishing up our game prototype to give like a final project build to our advisor for grading and stuff. So it's been a little hectic on top of like normal course loads and starting up Diversity in Games Club again.
That's right, so. Because you had to have Benny fill in for you while you were gone, right?
Yes.
So what was it like to be the co-founder and president of a group from the other side of the planet?
Benny was wonderful. He knew I was so busy. So he took care of so much while I was gone, and he did a wonderful job. Yeah, but I actually, for the first term of, or the first meeting of the year, during a term, I actually Skyped in. And I think at the time they were meeting at 6 p.m. So that's 7 a.m. for me in Japan, if I'm doing the time difference correctly. But yeah, so it was just like I woke up at 7 a.m. and like Skyped in to be like, hi, guys, I'm in Japan. And I just wanted to introduce myself. So I got to meet some of the new members and stuff that way, which was really cool.
That's right, because this was a term and you had all the freshmen coming in. And
yeah.
And you were, so now all of a sudden, 8 weeks or so into their academic career, you just show up and say, hey, I'm your president.
Yeah, so that was something that I felt very, very stressed about, just not being here during arguably the club's most like vital term, because we actually didn't become an official club until like over the summer, even though we had been holding weekly meetings and kind of doing like operating as a club since like before Christmas last year. So we actually are finally recognized by WPI as a club, and we have a budget and everything. But yeah, this was the first term where we could like go to activities fairs and recruit freshmen. And that's very important to like the survival of a club, is to just like find new members and capture them and not let them leave.
Right. You got to get them.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause then they become busy with other clubs and things and classes. So, yeah.
Yeah, one thing I learned about WPI is that everything at WPI is intense.
Yeah.
Like you can join the pep band, or you can join the diversity and gaming group, or you can, you know, do a double major. But whatever you do, it's going to take up all your time. WPI students, I don't know if this is true of other colleges. I only went to WPI for undergrad. Mm-hmm. But WPI students do not have spare time.
Yeah, we're all horrendously busy.
And yet you still take time out of your busy schedule to speak to the Polygamer podcast. I really appreciate that.
Of course. No, I've been so excited about this. Like,
I know. Like, you approached me and said, Ken, we want you as a guest speaker. I'm like, no, I want you as a guest speaker. So there.
Yeah, like as soon as this gets released, like I'm going to link it to my parents, because I told them about this like months ago. That I was like, oh my gosh, I might be interviewed on this super cool podcast. Like, I'm going places, Mom. Check me out.
Aw. And yeah. And since we're doing this on Skype anyway, we technically could have recorded while you were in Japan, but I wanted to, well, first of all, not add another thing for you to do while you're overseas. And second of all, I wanted to get your perspective on that experience after it was done.
In hindsight, yeah.
Right. Because who knows, like if I had spoken to you a month ago, you might have said, oh my God, Ken, this is amazing. And then you get back and you're like, I hated that.
Oh God, I think it would have been the opposite, because a month ago we were like doing like crunch time, because we left Japan on like the 11th of October, or yeah, it's been about a month actually. Yeah, so that would have been the time where I was like super like in like crunch time and like feeling miserable and like working all night. Like,
oh, don't be miserable.
Yeah. I just like I wanted the project to be so good, and then I think this is kind of like the eternal problem of like being self-employed or like managing your own work schedule, is that like every time I wasn't working, I felt guilty and wanted to be working. So,
oh, welcome to my life.
Yeah, exactly. It was miserable, because like in college, like you have deadlines, you know what you're supposed to be working on at what time, and you know if you have free time because you'd finished your thing before the deadline or whatever. But it's like, for this project, we were just like, we need to develop it as much as we can during this very restricted time period with very few team members. So just anytime I wasn't working, I just like felt kind of horrible about it.
Yeah, I have a whiteboard up in my home with a checklist of things I need to do every day. And if I get to the bottom of the list, then I get to do something for fun, like watch an episode of The Flash or something.
Yeah.
But there's always something else to do.
Exactly. So that was something I definitely struggled with.
So one last question. I know that this is very contingent on what sort of employment you get after graduation, but geographically, where would you like to see yourself?
Oh, you mean like after graduation?
Yes.
Preferably somewhere warm. If anyone is listening and like is hiring somewhere warm, like please just, I'll do anything. I don't want to get out of this like Massachusetts weather. It's horrible.
Oh, I mean, everything else about Massachusetts is wonderful, right? The people are great.
Worcester? Worcester.
Hey, I lived in Worcester for 14 years. It's not that bad.
No, I mean, like, I would love to live closer to Boston, I think. Like, Boston is an incredible city. Yeah, but I definitely love, like, the city setting. And then my younger sister just started college in Manhattan. I'm so jealous of her.
That's not all that far away. You can visit her when you go to different games.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, I actually, like, am planning, like, a few weekend trips and stuff to go see her. But I'm very jealous that, like, she gets to live there. So I would love to live in Manhattan. But I'm looking into AAA studios as well. So Silicon Valley area. So it's definitely warm there. But yeah, I honestly have no idea. My parents actually just recently moved to Rome. And they were trying to buy me plane tickets to come visit them for next summer. And it was like very weird and like kind of stressful for me to realize that like I didn't know, I don't know where I'm going to be necessarily like next summer, depending on employment, no employment, where I get employment. Yeah, that was just a very weird feeling. Like in a year's time, I have no idea where I'm going to be.
Right, because when you're in college, you have these 3 summers that are short-lived, and you can do something for a few months and then go back to school. But
exactly.
But once you graduate, whatever you start doing after that is forever.
Oh, gosh.
Oof. No pressure.
I know, but yeah, so it's just I'm a little stressed about it, but I'm optimistic, and I think no matter where I end up, it's going to be a great experience. I'm going to get to work with awesome people in the industry. So I'm excited. Nervous, but excited.
Well, you are a very motivated and conscientious young person, and I'm confident that whatever you do, you will be successful at.
Thank you. I hope desperately that that's the case.
Do you want to leave our listeners with any contact info, where to find you on the web or on Twitter?
Oh, yeah, definitely. So on Twitter, I'm at Chesky, so it's CESCHIII. And then I guess my portfolio page is linked on my Twitter, but it's fcarletoleon, so my last name, .com. Yeah, I think that's all I need to plug.
Wonderful. There will be links in the show notes. Francesca, thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
This has been Polygamer, a GameBits production. Find more episodes, read our blog, or send feedback at polygamer.net.
Can I tell you something really embarrassing?
Please.
I don't mind if you put this in the podcast because it's funny. But when I was in middle school, so I guess that was eighth grade, my last year of middle school, my school put on a big musical every year. And that was like the year after or 2 years after High School Musical came out. And they actually decided that they were going to have these middle school kids put on a rendition of High School Musical. So I was in that. I was in a production of High School Musical.
Who were you?
I was a cheerleader. Can you believe that?
I can see that.